welcoming everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it on the internet. Let them know that you love what we've got going on. You can connect with the show on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's high on Wemby, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
It's Wemby season. It's good. It's fantastic. I just wish I was downtown San Antonio honking. This week we're recording on Wednesday, and it's not because the hangover started early for the Wemby celebration. No. Work indeed came in, but also on Tuesday. Just a beautiful scene. Unbelievable. San Antonio, cursed in many ways as a city, blessed with lottery picks.
San Antonio has now gone 2 for 2 on tanking. Like, let's just be real here. They tanked this year and grabbed the presumably another generational 7-footer. Last time they tanked, David Robinson had health issues that kept him out all year, air quotes. And they got Tim Duncan, also coincided with a certain Goodrich family moving to the San Antonio area. So I don't know, maybe it's just I'm a portent of good things. But speaking of good things coming up, Texas has a shot to knock off a top 10 team and put themselves in the catbird seat for the Big 12 championship this weekend. So we'll preview the big baseball matchup this weekend, and we'll run around all of the conference and national championship runs that happened this past weekend, and we down the 40. So Texas dropped a weird one on Friday in the doubleheader against San Jose State, but then came back and scored 42 runs in two games, Kyle, to get a 2-1 season win over San Jose State, setting them up for this game's three-game weekend series, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, as you're listening to it. And they might be, depending on when you listen to this, already playing. But Texas is taking on number 6 West Virginia to essentially decide the conference. It's tight at the top. Texas will continue to kick itself for that OU series that could have put them in the driver's seat, but we're not here to adjudicate the past. We're here to look at the future. So West Virginia, number 6 in the conference, coming off of a 2-1 series win over Texas Tech at home. They've got an incredible lineup and one of the best players in the conference, if not the country, behind the plate. It's a big weekend for Texas, and it feels like Texas had a wake-up call against San Jose State on Friday and woke wide awake, woke all the way up on the second half of the doubleheader and then the Saturday game. Do you think they can carry that over to this matchup with West Virginia?
Look, I'm just going to say, if Texas hits more than one grand slam in a game against West Virginia, I think they might win. Eric Kennedy had 2 home runs, a grand slam in that, I think, that second game of the doubleheader when they scored 24. But also,
a lot of runs.
Also, Mr. Constantine had a grand slam. And then you had, you know, solo homers from Powell Carson. You know, Texas hits the ball like that. I feel pretty confident that they can do something here. we'll see. They're going to be dangerous with the bats, but they're going to face some really good arms. Right, we know that it's a little bit of a rotation shakeup for West Virginia, but we know that we're definitely going to see Blaine Traxel as the staying in the Friday slot, though this series starts on Thursday. So maybe they're just keeping him in his normal rotation since they only need to win one. Right, they win one, they win the conference. Texas sweeps, then there's some other things they have to do, but they only need to win one, so maybe they're putting all their eggs in the Friday basket. But they're going to have tough pitching, right? Blaine Traxel. Great. You know, this is, to me, as much as there's the best hitter in the conference, he's not quite Melendez, but I mean, the dude is leading the conference in JJ Weatherholt, that is, in batting average at .466, which is a lot of number. Hits, on base percentage, runs, stolen bases, total bases. I'm pretty sure he's leading like most of the categories if you really get down into it. Slugging percentage, on base percentage, on base plus. Slugging, that's OPS. Runs scored, etc. Right? He's good. He's really good. He could legitimately win some National Player of the Year awards. He most likely already has the Big 12 one locked up. But in a series with Texas, who can be very hot and has some really good bats, taking on a West Virginia team with the best batter in the country, I do think this comes down to pitching, right? I talked about the Friday, starter for them, who's Blaine Traxel, really, really good, second in the Big 12 in wins, thrown five complete games this year. He's going to just be an innings eater. I think he's got almost 20 innings more than anyone else in the conference. But if you look, I like to look at pitching, and obviously ERA is important. This series will feature Lucas Gordon, who's second right now, LeBaron Johnson, who's third, Blaine Traxel, who's fourth, and presumably the starter who wasn't named will be Ben Hampton to close it out, who's seventh, right? Really good pitching, especially your top two for both of these teams. So whatever days those matchups come on, or if that's why they're trying to stagger them since they only need to get one, it will be interesting to see the gamesmanship. But also one of the best closers in the conference. Legitimately, if they gave out a Pitcher of the Year award, Carson Reed could be in the short list, the 5 or 10 for that as a closer as well. So good pitching staff. They know how to win games, and you've seen it this year. No one expected quite this from them, and they've really done everything they needed all season. I think they've won five straight Big 12 series. So
yeah, they've won five straight Big 12 series. Like, and it seems to me, I think you're probably on to something, that maybe they're throwing their eggs in the Friday Saturday basket, right? Throwing a guy on Thursday who's used to throwing on Friday may throw him off. I said throw three times in that sentence, but it's fine. So, like, keeping Porco on Saturday and then pitching, who's presumably they've got a dual ace situation, right? I think any team would be happy with either Ben Hampton or Blaine Traxel as their Friday starter. And so saving Hampton, if you need him on Saturday, he's there. You can pitch your ace because they haven't determined who that is, right? So you've got your normal Friday kickoff the series guy available for you on Sunday if you need to win a Sunday game to get the conference. So like you said, I think there's some gamesmanship happening. West Virginia's pitching Carson Estridge, who's 3-0 in the season, 3.75 ERA. So he's no slouch, but he's not the normal guy who started a field. It seems like Robbie Porco, the freshman, who has done freshman things. He's had some good outings, he's had some bad outings. He's 4-1 on the year, but his last five starts have been no decision. So it feels like if Sunday comes out that they don't necessarily need the win, if they get the Saturday win, then maybe they do go with the freshman and let Ben Hampton take the weekend off, or they kind of go pitching by committee and don't wear out any arms. There's a lot of options that they have there. They're in the advantage. Texas gave them this advantage when they dropped all three games against OU a few weeks back, right? That was really where this series became the pivotal decide the conference one, when Texas dropped that game. Texas, for their trouble, will be pitching Lucas Gordon on Thursday, the day you're listening to this, LeBaron Johnson on Friday, and then Tanner Witt will get the start on Saturday, presumably on a pitch count, potentially short leash. He's only got two starts on the year, kind of in a rehab situation. But having Tanner Witt to kick things off, maybe a couple of innings for you if he's on, not a bad thing.
Yeah, it helps to have a guy with Witt's composure, right? He's still finding his stuff a little bit, but he's been in big situations. It won't rattle him. I did hear West Virginia's manager talk about trying to keep his team from getting in the moment, right? Going to Texas and playing in front of crowds that they just set their all-time record in their last home game, but they said the crowd in Texas will probably be three times that size. For college baseball, not every team has the home advantage. Texas does. Texas protects the dish. Tanner Witt, home crowd energy, chance to, do something for UT. I like. So, Gerald, tell the folks what Texas actually, what exactly needs to happen this weekend. Because we know, win all three of your games. That part's easy. Sweep West Virginia. What else needs to happen for the rightful championship to stay in its rightful home, Dish Falk? What do we need outside of just a sweep, which is no small task for a really good West Virginia team, the number 6 team in the nation? But outside of that small thing, what else needs to happen?
We need some bedlam to happen in Bedlam. Basically, we need OU to pull off the upset. If OU can win a couple of games against Oklahoma State, that would put Texas back in the catbird seat, because OSU does have the tiebreaker over Texas. So if Texas sweeps and OSU drops a couple, then that's for Texas to that's Texas's conference, and they'll get the number one seed and get a bye and all those good things. But coming off of that, they'll head to the Big 12 tournament next weekend, and that sets them up for the NCAA tournament in a few weeks. Selection Sunday is on its way. Coming soon, we'll obviously keep you up to date with all of that. Now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. The Texas softball team is preparing to host the 22nd regional in school history. Did not host last year. They did not get one of the top 16 seeds, but they are the 13th seed overall, so they'll be hosting a regional this weekend at McCombs. They'll take on Seton Hall in game one. Texas State and Texas A&M are the other two teams in that regional. They'll square off on Friday. Saturday, the winners of those two games will square off in the first game. The losers of those two games will play in an elimination game. It's double elimination is how it works. So the top team will advance from the regional. You all know how double elimination works. But they start against Seton Hall on Friday, and then hopefully we'll play the winner of Texas A&M and Texas State.
I don't mind knocking either of those teams out. Texas State's been a good team and seems to be just a little bit of a thorn in the side of the softball and baseball teams generally. They're always a tough out. So I wouldn't mind it being A&M, knock A&M out. That'd be fine with me.
Right. I'm never mad about beating anybody in state, right? That feels good to me. Tennis. Speaking of advancing, well, for at least a little bit, both tennis teams advanced to the Elite Eight. Men's tennis swept North Carolina, setting up a matchup with South Carolina this weekend in Lake Nona, Florida. The ladies won in a dramatic fashion against Pepperdine, but then were eliminated on Wednesday by number one North Carolina, 4-2 in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, North Carolina's women came and avenged the men, unfortunately, after they got swept. So tough out for the two-time reigning national champion women's tennis program. Number one, North Carolina is a really good team. You know, they are a little bit stronger at the top. Texas, you know, as we said all year, to be a top 10 team without a true Peyton Stearns level, you know, she's going to go professional, dominating ace, really strong, 1-2-3, but not, you know, top 10 singles graded player. And so Texas did it as a team all year, ran into just a buzzsaw, a 4-2 loss in the final eight. A great season for that team, making it to Lake Nona, right? There was, when you replace a player like Peyton Stearns, there was a lot of question over, you know, how the rest of the team would step up. And I would say, look, top 10 Texas, they finished in the Elite Eight, which I believe, right, is fifth place for Director's Cup standing. Credit to them. And the men, now you go. We like to trade off national championships. Now you go and win the dang thing.
It's your turn to the men. North Carolina, like you said, is a buzzsaw, and Texas managed to take two points for them. Like, they haven't dropped that many. Like, they, I think they swept, they lost one, I think, to Florida in the super regional, and then that goes back, like, they swept both of the first rounds. So no shame to the ladies. They'll be back next year. They're continuing to recruit well. They've got things going. The men have an opportunity to keep things moving. They're the number one team in the country for a reason, and they will obviously try to defend that and bring the title home to Austin. Speaking of bringing the title home to Austin, track and field, the ladies won their fourth consecutive Big 12 championship, scoring the second most points in Big 12 history behind Texas from 2 years ago for that record, but an absolute incredible outing for them. The men, number eight, finished second in the conference, bringing home the runner-up for another year.
Coach Flo really knows what he's doing, especially with women's track, right? Four consecutive Big 12 championships. Been a great hire, especially on the women's side in that time. Julian Alfred continues to be a monster. Scored 11% of Texas's points on the day, won the 100 with the fourth fastest time in NCAA history, which is just, you know, run-of-the-mill for her. The 200, and was part of the 4x1 winning team. Rosetta Adeleke wins the 400. Those are, you know, people who will be in contention, serious contention for postseason awards. You expected that from them. On the men's side, a little disappointed that you only had one Big 12 championship. Yusuf Bizimana, congrats to him, though, with the personal best time to get the 800-meter title. But a couple Longhorns with good finishes, but not taking home the gold, ultimately led to a runner-up in the Big 12. But you know, they're still a good team, and let's see where they can finish in the Nationals. Maybe get a couple things to break their way. Have someone post some personal best. See what where they can end up with it with a young team.
To your earlier point, Kyle, Julian Alfred made the next cut for the Bowerman watch list, joining Akelia Smith on that list as well. Number two rowing won its eighth consecutive Big 12 championship, sweeping all five races, bringing home the 12th in school history.
Yeah, that's another one where you hire the right coach and instantly you start winning all the time. I like that. They had six named the All-Big 12 team. Just wanted to point out specifically, Caitlin Nifton and Rachel Rain both earned their third straight All-Big 12 team. Anna Jensen for the second straight year. And a couple newbies, Sophia Calabrese, Etta Carpenter. It's not spelled correctly like Carpenter, but still consider her a cousin. Etta Carpenter and Susanna Temming, all first-time all-conference honorees.
Congrats to them. Keeping it country club, number 15 men's golf finishes fifth in the East Lansing Regional, meaning they're going to advance to the NCAA Championship. Top five teams in each region advance. So they've got the longest active streak in the country, 16 consecutive trips to the NCAA Championships, Texas, for its trouble.
Yeah, Christian Moss led the team at 4-under, I think was 5th overall for the competitors in the field. Freshman Tommy Morrison had a career-best 8th place finish, finishing 5-under on the weekend. That's Big Tommy. We're excited for what he's got ahead. Again, a really, really young team all around, so playing with house money at this point, just make a run, see what happens.
Yeah, this wasn't meant to be the year. I think Texas is really young, so they've got an opportunity. Like you said, this is they're ahead of schedule, so keep it up and see how far they can go. It a team that
in defending their national championship, right? we got national championship aspirations, but we also have title defenses to take care of.
All of the above. Title winning, not defenses, but title winning hopes coming to the sand in Austin. Chris Del Conte continues to be just an absolute menace to other women's athletic programs after stealing Vic Schaefer and Eldrick Floreal and Mike White. And I feel like I'm missing one in there as well, but you get the gist.
I don't think he did he hire Dave O'Neill to the rowing coach? I think he may have been before Del Conte.
We can credit Del Conte.
I'm going to loop it in. I'm going to say Del Conte somehow made it.
Yeah, that's fine. But anywho, so he went out west and stole UCLA sand volleyball coach Stan Metzger. Man's coming off of a Pac-12 championship and an NCAA runner-up. Like, literally, like this semester, and Del Conte just went in and snatched him, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Like, it's crazy to like take that out in any other context and just imagine, like, football's out of the question, but a basketball team, like, imagine, you know, UCLA basketball just won a national championship and you went and just hired them. And like, it's pretty unfathomable that we get to keep flexing on folks like this, but man, do I love it. As someone who prides this podcast on our ability to go top to bottom of knowledge and coverage of all sports on campus, Chris Del Conte makes our job easy, admittedly, and also makes the Director's Cup incredibly reachable every year with these types of hires.
Yeah, go check out Director's Cup dates. He had a cup date this afternoon as we're recording it on Wednesday. And Texas and Stanford, 1-2, tight. Going to be a close finish, but Texas currently sits atop the rankings. We got some schedule releases. The volleyball and soccer teams released the official schedules for next athletic year. The ladies will start their season. Orange and white game will be on August 12th. They'll have an exhibition against A&M Corpus Christi on the 18th. Loyola Marymount, they're going out to California for a two-step against Loyola Marymount and Long Beach State. Then going to Minnesota. Terrible, terrible switch. Long Beach to Minneapolis, not great. But the home regular season opener, a big one, September 3rd in the gym, Greg, against the Stanford Cardinal. Massive non-conference matchup for them.
We were just talking about national title defenses. It will be weird to watch this team without Logan Eggleston. Like, it's going to be a little bit jarring the first time they trot out, and you're like, wait, is she in the locker room? Is she hurt? What's happening?
Is she a coach?
She's gone. She's gone. But there's just so much talent on that team. I think this is going to be a Matty Skinner team next year, and I'm excited for that. There's so much talent top to bottom on that team to just run it back.
The Ladies of the Pitch also released their schedule. Non-conference matchups, they've got an exhibition against Texas A&M, Corpus Christi as well. Their regular season opener is against Long Beach State. Wonder if they're traveling together. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see how that goes. But non-conference schedule for them: Rice, LSU, Iona, Rio Grande Valley, SMU, SFA, and Gonzaga. Solid outing for the ladies. Those games are super cheap to get into. It'd be cool to go watch them play LSU or Gonzaga.
None of these things sound like bad ideas to me. This feels to me like the year with the core of the team being a little bit older next year, with that really great trio that they brought in from the Dallas club soccer scene. And additional, there are some other stars, but with Lexi Missimo and Trinity Byers, we're going to see the soccer team finally. I think this is the year they make a run. I really do.
Make a run at it.
All right, Gerald, now it's time to look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. The Texas-Bama game is announced for 6 p.m. on ESPN. I think it's safe to say, at least on being shown in primetime, Texas is back.
This game is going to be ridiculous, and I'm already hearing a lot of hype. Like, I listen to a lot of national college football podcasts, and folks are saying, like, they wouldn't be shocked if Texas went to Tuscaloosa and won this game. And, like, I wouldn't be either. I think, you know, last year was a pretty potent example that Texas had a lot of talent, and Texas has just gotten better. The talent gap is, I mean, Alabama's still Alabama, and they're going to have first round and free, you know, first day picks all over the board. I guess what used to be first day picks, right? First three rounds. But like, they've got all sorts of talent all over the board. But Alabama seems vulnerable. They don't really have the quarterback decided heading into fall camp. When was the last time you could say that? So, like, you know, the champ is down, right? The champ is cut. If you go basketball or boxing analogy, so like, good. And if Texas wins this game, the hype is going to be unbelievable.
Rat poison, Gerald. Rat poison. Don't put that out on the airwaves for. I know Nick Saban listens to this podcast. You have to know he's going to clip this clip. He knows how to do that also with technology. He's going to isolate this clip. Nick Saban, you can beat Texas. They are no match for you. So there, we're covered now. It'll be a tremendous game. I am excited. I'm so tired of 11 a.m. games. I'm excited for primetime. Be a primetime team, get to play in primetime. Speaking of primetime, it's the NBA playoffs, and we're down to one, Gerald. The Horns have been falling by the wayside as the conference finals get underway. A lot of Longhorns didn't quite make it. Kevin Durant, most notably in the Suns, upset. Not upset. I think the Nuggets were highly favored. But, you know, it's Kevin Durant. It's the Suns. In six games to the Joker and the Denver Nuggets. P.J. Tucker's 76ers fell in game seven to the Celtics. That one was an upset and was a heartbreaker. Jericho Sims in the Knicks couldn't keep the run going against just a red-hot Cinderella Miami team in six. Tristan Thompson, now the last Longhorn left. His Lakers knocked off the Warriors in six, did fall to said Joker in the first game. But all our hopes on Tristan Thompson, you know, what could go wrong?
Ask a Kardashian.
Ask a Kardashian. PJ Tucker, I saw a line a day or two ago at his shoe store, which is close to my house in Houston. I don't know if he was there or they had a new release, but it is cool that PJ Tucker has a shoe store in Houston. I hope he gets to spend time on his real passion during the off season.
Houston, Texas, baby.
Ooh, I like that. Houston, Texas. Very nice. The TABC, Texas Association of Basketball Coaches, named Longhorn Associate Head Coach Elena Lovato the 2023 Division I Women's Assistant Coach of the Year. They also named Rory Harmon their D1 Women's Player of the Year. Congrats to Rory, and certainly congrats to Coach Lovato, who I don't know personally, but she seems like just a lovely human being on all social media. And anytime I've seen any interviews with her, a great recruiter who's been with Vic from the Mississippi State days, left the program, came back to the program. Love to see it.
I mean, I feel like she's probably not long for this world as far as like being a Texas coach, right? She's probably going to get poached in a few years. And you know what? That's a good thing, right? Like having your assistant coaches get poached for head coaching jobs means that it's a destination, and it's a not a stepping stone in the bad way, but like come to Texas, coach some elite talent, help Texas win some championships, and then go get paid and get the big job. Like it's really incredible. So glad to see her getting the recognition. And we knew Rory Harmon was going to get all the awards, and she's going to continue to get all the awards. So big ups to her.
Yeah, the greatest compliment as a head coach is to have a coaching tree where people want your coaches. Look at Popovich and, you know, all the folks out there. Ime Udoka, now the Rockets coach, of course, out of that, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go into the whole list of Brett Brown and Budenholzer, et cetera, but Steve Kerr. But anyways, it is the biggest compliment to a coach. Speaking, keeping it women's basketball, Madison Booker, incoming recruit, was selected to the USA Basketball U19 national team. They'll be at the U19 Women's World Cup in Madrid in middle of July. Great way to spend your last summer before coming to the 40 Acres, July 15th to 23rd. She's a McDonald's All-American. She's played pretty much at every level. USA helped him capture the U17 World Cup and the 2021 U16 Americas Championship. She's 6'1", but she's a big, but she plays small forward. She's kind of a really exciting out of Mississippi. Vic still keeping his connections there, getting a great player. It's exciting to see her. And then another player who this one slipped a little bit under the radar, but Tiona Heron, who was a big recruit, like a top 60 recruit in last year's high school class, went to Kentucky, did not play. She underwent open heart surgery. She's from DeSoto, so made her way back to Texas. I believe she was high school teammates with the Amina Muhammad at DeSoto, where they were a couple times state champions. It made sense for her after the heart surgery to come back home, and it made sense for Vic Schaefer, right? You're bringing in a front court player who, you know, she'll get more and more recovered, more and more minutes, and just add to that depth that they have there. Obviously, Abby Boutier is another 6'5", like a giant in that front court. Texas loading up with the sign. Tiona Heron, I like her nickname is Tree at 6'4".
Yeah, Vic Schaefer teased that there'd be some portal news coming soon, and there it is, right? Like, that's a big deal, and I think there may be multiple portal news is coming, apparently. So Texas reloading and trying to get back after a disappointing deep run into the NCAA tournament.
I love Vic Schaefer. He at the latest Texas coaches tour where they were in San Antonio, the first thing he did after, because Sark went up and apologized for the performance that the football team had in the Alamo Bowl. You know, Vic basically said he wished he could have played another tournament in San Antonio like the year before when they had a Cinderella Elite Eight run. And I think he meant it, right? It's Vic likes winning. He hates losing. And I think that's why he's a tremendous coach.
I honestly think he hates losing more than he likes winning, which is generally the sign of a winner. That's what you want.
Agree. All right, Gerald, let's get to closing this thing out. Bit of Godzillatron, what have you been watching on your giant screen?
This last week, I got a weird itch to revisit some old Marvel movies. They're putting the Spider-Man movies back on Disney Plus for the first time. So I went back. I don't think I've watched Spider-Man Homecoming since it like hit theaters, or maybe like one time after it, you know, came to streaming like 5 years ago or whatever. But rewatched that, and it was absolutely like, it felt just so good as it did the first time. But I actually ended up pausing it during the opening because like they do a flashback to Captain America Civil War. So I went and watched Captain America Civil War where they introduced Spider-Man to the MCU, and that movie holds up. Like there's it's got flaws, and it's got some of the same flaws it did originally, but like that airport fight scene is just still incredible, still feels like a comic book come to life. Like I was geeking like I always did, like I did the first time when I saw it in the theaters. And Homecoming is just great. Like perfect. Like John Hughes meets Spider-Man is what it was, and it just was perfect, and I loved it.
I like that, Gerald. I like that you went. That feels like the most Gerald of an answer of what you watched: Captain America: Civil War and Spider-Man: Homecoming. Great, great picks, especially great Gerald picks. So I watched a bit of the sixth season of Better Call Saul. Recently came out on Netflix. I'd been waiting. I had watched, hadn't watched it live, but I had kind of binged 1 through 5 and loved it. Like I love Breaking Bad. I really did. Thought it was a tremendous, tremendous, nearly perfect show. There is a weird part of me that I'm not going to say it's better. I'm not hopping on that train. And I've talked about Better Call Saul on this podcast, but as I watched the sixth season, I think I'm 3 episodes in. It's just, I might like it more. I like the Saul Goodman character that as they fleshed it out, like the hijinks, the everything. I like it. I like the cast. Of course, it's just extra Lanyap, Mike Ehrmantraut. I'll take any of that. It's a tremendous show. It would stand alone as a great show without Breaking Bad, but to think they made 2 shows in that universe that are this good, it's absurd. I also caught, and I'm not ready to properly review it, but my wife was watching, and I caught, I don't know, an episode and a half in the background without fully paying attention, but I had to stop multiple times. I was working over the weekend trying to just prepare. I had a busy week going on, but I had to put my laptop down multiple times and say, what the heck is that? A show called Roar. And so I probably watched about an hour total of it. And it's weird, man. It's a feminist anthology. It's got Issa Rae in the first episode, and This House stands for Issa Rae. But there's a bunch of stars in it. Like Nicole Kidman's in it, and there's a bunch of stars in it. But it's just every episode like tries to out-weird each other. I don't know if it's good. I'd have to really ask her. I just wanted to throw that out there. If you're looking for weird feminist Apple TV series, then boy, do I have something to tell you that you should watch. But I can't recommend it on its cohesiveness and the amount of sense that it makes.
What a rousing endorsement, Kyle. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I'm keeping it short. You stole it in the intro, but I refuse to change. I shall not yield from the top of Wemby Mountain. I was always banging the drum on 7'5" French super prospect Victor Wembanyama. Texas is ready for the Wembyburger, Whataburger endorsement deals. I can't wait for his HEB commercials. A man who towers over Tim Duncan, who before his draft was kicking it with Kylian Mbappe in France. Surely will, you know, complete the triumvirate of Boris Diaw and Tony Parker. They already have a Frenchman on the All-NBA rookie team. Don't forget other French Spurs like Nando DiColo. Somehow Nick Batum never played here. I don't know. But it's a French haven. I'm sure there must be at least one good French restaurant with all these Frenchmen passing through the city. Surely, I think he loves ramen too, but San Antonio folks, send Victor your Rex. But I'm just so excited. Like Gerald said it at the top, the Spurs are the best ever at tanking. Like you talk about a 7'5" player who can play all positions, can go out, can shoot the three, can penetrate. Like he's like Kevin Durant with 6 extra inches. It's wild. He could defend. You know, he's taller than Rudy Gobert. Just think about that when you're thinking about tall French guys. Maybe not as thick as Gobert, but he's a giant who can do all the things. I've heard him described, and this is a bit of a hyperbole, I'm sure, but as the best prospect in the history of team sports, which is a bit much. But let's just say he's one of the top 5 prospects purely. We'll see how he turns out in NBA history. And that list surely includes LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Tim Duncan, and Wemby. There's my top 4 in whatever order you want to put it. Spurs got 2 of those 4. Now they just need to bring LeBron home. And they have 12 first-round draft picks over the next 5 drafts to complement and build this team. This is how you tank, baby. We're back.
Oh, man. It is going to be honking season again soon. I have a feeling. And I apologize to all the Houston Rockets fans that are listening. This is
tough.
Kyle and I are both from San Antonio. It is what it is. I'm banging the drum this week on some big news about the NCAA franchise. We had some sad news a few weeks ago that they were going to delay and not release this year. But again, as the Shigeru Miyamoto, who you probably know from like Mario Brothers and Nintendo, basically he said a delayed game is eventually good, but a bad game is bad forever. And so, like, I'm glad if they push back for a year to make a better game. And one of the things that allowed them to do is to get some group licensing going and get actual player likenesses in the game. So the name, image, and likeness rule change has allowed now actual players in the game. And so they'll likely also have like a cover athlete who is potentially an active player. I think it would just make sense to do what they did previously and give it to last year's Heisman Trophy winner, because college football is weird like that. But players getting paid, players having it, not having to download Pasta Padres rosters a month into the game. Yeah, I still remember that. Still got it locked in. But yeah, it's great to see that the players are getting the recognition. They'll get a little bit of change from a game that I've been looking forward to for now a decade and a year.
Pasta Padre just unlocked like happy firing neurons in my brain that like I hadn't thought about those two words together, but instantly smiled as soon as you said that. Golden times. What a countless fount of joy that this, the hours that have been spent with this game, enjoying, not always joy. Sometimes you get online dynasties with your friends and you know, there can be times that aren't as joyful, but that's another story for another podcast. Glad to hear it. Give us whenever it comes, NCAA, and we will thank you for it with our hard earned dollars.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodwood. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod, Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with some more national championship and conference run updates. And we're about a month out from our season preview series. We're going to do something a little bit different with it this year, but we're excited. It's one of our favorite things that we get to do every year. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. It's Wemby season, baby.